Tonight, I'm going to be talking about compassion, about what that is, and how it works in our lives. I want to start by briefly telling a story about how compassion shaped the history of Buddhism. A couple of centuries after the death of the Buddha, there was a disagreement among the monks that resulted in a split in Buddhism. What resulted was the Mahayana tradition, which dropped most of the rules, the precepts that the monks followed, and all of the suttas of the original Theravada tradition. And just so you're clear, I'm a Theravada teacher, although I initially practiced Zen, which is part of Mahayana, for my first 5 years. A few centuries after the original split, there was a third tradition that developed in Tibet. His Holiness the Dalai Lama often recites his lineage from the Buddha through Mahayana to the Tibetan tradition before he begins teaching. At the time of the original split, there was this spiritual craze amongst Buddhists. In fact, I think also in the Hindu religion of the time. It resulted in adding a teaching to Buddhism, which in the suttas, the Buddha seems to have assumed that we understood. And that's the teachings about caring for others. The Buddha said many times in the suttas that he began teaching out of compassion for the suffering or dukkha of humanity. The Mahayana monks at this time made compassion a crucial teaching and a key part of their practice. Theravada, instead, adopted the four Brahma Viharas, the first of which is metta, or loving kindness. I teach that compassion is metta's response to the suffering of others. Sympathetic joy is its response to their happiness, and equanimity keeps us in balance. Here in the West, there's a lot of crossover among the traditions of Buddhism. In my Zen years, I chanted the Bodhisattva vow almost every week. It starts, and I'm almost going to go into the voice of the chant, but I'll just read it. Beings are numberless. I vow to awaken with them all. In this vow, I committed to keep returning to human life and not enter nirvana as long as anyone on earth suffers, in order to help them. This vow probably led me toward teaching, and I have never renounced it. Many people in the Mahayana tradition consider Theravada selfish because it doesn't consider compassion the sole focus for caring for others. This is the reason why they called their tradition the Mahayana, which means greater vehicle. Globalization has not entirely erased this prejudice. Truly, Mahayanans do place a lot of emphasis on compassion, and I often think Theravadins should do so a little more, too. So that's why I wanted to give this talk tonight, not in order to say anything new, but to remind us how important the capacity for compassion is in for our well-being and for that of others and for the entire world. Next, I want to talk about the experience of compassion, what it feels like to be compassionate in the moment. Despite the differences between the Mahayana and the Theravada notions of compassion, it always seems to work pretty much the same. Compassion isn't just a concept, but it's an experience, a key capacity we have as human beings to act outside of selfish motivations. When we feel compassion, we drop a lot of self-absorption, and that frees an uplifting energy that enables us to approach things that would otherwise repel or daunt us, like the sights, sounds, or smells of illness or great mental suffering. When we feel compassion, we're totally present with another being, grounded in that moment. We are just who we are, with no thought of what we want or how we appear, just bringing all of our attention to this being and how we could help. Compassion enables us to see others in their full nature without judgment or preconception. It doesn't give us the power to read their minds. But when we're compassionate, the extent and intensity of our awareness does exceed our ordinary perceptions. I took that Bodhisattva vow almost 3 decades ago, and I still live by it. Compassion feels like a magnet in my heart, pulling me toward the dukkha of others. It can be in the moment when I automatically hand people the change they're missing at the cash register, or in the decades that I've devoted to practice, study, and freely teaching the Dharma. I've been filled with compassion in prisons, hospice wards, living rooms, and addiction recovery homes or programs, even when all I can do is acknowledge someone's dukkha and be present with it. There's something magical about being present with suffering. whether it's physical or mental. Compassion doesn't hurt us. Instead, it holds suffering in a field of loving kindness that gives pain room to arise and eventually pass away. I once spent several hours with a dying woman who was moaning or crying out in pain because the nurse couldn't reach the doctor to change this woman's morphine dose and give her relief. The woman's nephew and his wife were with her, and they were suffering terribly at witnessing her pain, as well as their impending loss of her in their lives. This woman's pains, her cries, bitterly pierced my heart. I felt her pain was ridiculous cruelty perpetrated by the law and the medical profession, so I too had a lot of dukkha. But I was there to practice compassion. So I consciously tried to open my heart wide enough to hold all that was true in that moment. The end of this being's life, her terrible pain, her relatives' anguish, and my own frustration. It was a lot for my usually little heart to hold. But as I felt my heart begin to open to these terrible truths, it grew. My heart felt split wide open and huge, holding all these forms of suffering. There was nothing I could do to change the situation, but I could fit all that dukkha into my heart and hold it with calm and peace and love. So the three of us sat around this dying woman, soothing her forehead and holding her hands, while her nephew and niece talked about what a wonderful person she was. The whole scene settled down, including the woman's moans. When it was time for me to leave for the night, I kissed the woman goodbye and returned the hugs of her nephew and niece. We were all quiet for a moment, and then I left with just as much sadness as ever. But it was held in a heart that felt it could hold the whole world. My heart still can contract, but compassion always makes it expand again and feel at peace. And I'm confident that I can hold whatever is true at any moment. Not all situations that evoke compassion are as dramatic as the one I just described. It can go from being touched by a lost dog poster to standing near the widow at a funeral. we usually search for something we can do to help. But compassion gives us the calm to see and accept when there's nothing we can or should do, while we remain ready to act if we do see an opportunity to help. When I watch people observe others suffering, I can see on their faces the differences between horror, pity, and compassion. Those who feel compassion might show sadness or other forms of dukkha, but I can see they're also holding it with a kind of peace. Buddhist friends describe their experiences with compassion as times of growth and surprising calm. So, you might be wondering, well, where can I use compassion? And maybe one of the best places is in relationships that we have. Often, when we have any kind of ongoing relationships with people, there are times when we annoy each other. We're such multifaceted beings. We're like rough-cut diamonds with pointy places everywhere. And we can easily get scratchy with each other. But these differences can also be the riches of the relationship. So when we're at odds with someone we're fond of, it helps to reach into our compassionate hearts, because at those moments, both of us are experiencing dukkha. It's important to remember that even though we all generate our own dukkha, we aren't to blame for it. We are actually suffering from it, and we deserve compassion. That does not, unfortunately, mean that we can expect others to feel compassion for us when we're annoying them. But if we turn it around, we can see that when others bother us, we should try to be compassionate. Why? Well, the short, easy answer is that compassion feels so much better than irritation. But when we remember that at least one of us, and probably both of us, are having some dukkha, it lets us hold our relationship in the arms of acceptance and love. If we don't care for those close to us, they couldn't annoy us so much. Seeing this when we're upset with a friend or lover or relative can let us stay present with them and hold kind or at least accepting feelings for them. That acceptance part of compassion gives us the ability to recognize when we cannot help others or ourselves. this is such a valuable lesson that I've learned with working with people who are dying and people with addictions. You make the effort and then let go of expecting any particular result. Sometimes being fully present means saying a heartfelt goodbye. This capacity for compassion lets us recognize when a relationship is just not working. We may need to be gently frank with the other person to seek a way to change our relationship and maybe save it. And if we can't, to let it go. Compassion never requires that we abandon our boundaries, only that we maintain them with care for ourselves and for others. Relatives and co-workers can be especially annoying. We did not choose to have these people in our lives, and we probably can't walk away from them. I've tried to be friends with some people out of compassion, and it has never worked. It does help to remember that just like us, difficult people suffer. In fact, most people who upset or harm others are acting out of their own dukkha. Opening to compassion for them won't change them, but it will probably make it a bit easier to be around them. Now I want to look at how compassion presents itself in our lives in general. It isn't limited to specific events or the way we respond to them. It's a capacity that's a part of our being, just like muscles. And it gets stronger the more we exercise it. In my hospice training, I was taught to, 1, intentionally open to the suffering of others, 2, remain mindful of how I was affected, while 3, focusing on the person in distress, and 4, do all this with an attitude of acceptance. This is what's true in the moment. We can also incline the mind and the heart toward compassion during meditation by sending metta to those we know are suffering. Compassion can become like a guiding principle in our lives. It provides a powerful basis for making a commitment. Out of compassion, I wanted to help people who were dying, and I made a 1-year commitment to serve as a volunteer with Zen Hospice Project. I ended up staying 3.5 years and then helped various individuals in their final months for another 1.5 years. I'm now often asked to counsel people who are confronting death or loss and I always agree to. Even when it seems I haven't actually done someone any good, the experience of feeling and acting on compassion fulfills me in a way that nothing else can. People in the helping professions often draw their determination and energy, and boy, they need a lot of it, from compassion for their students, their patients, etc. When we're motivated by compassion, our effort is its own reward. And that's true even if, for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to help. Compassion is also at the root of our overall practice, as well as underlying most of the perfections or paramis, those qualities that lead to liberation. I know people who pursue meditation in order to be less annoying to others. Our practice does make us more considerate, more understanding, and less impulsive. We become active forces for making this a better world. This is why at the end of Sangha meetings, we usually dedicate the merit of our practice to all other beings. Our meditation and the way we live our lives should be beneficial to us and to all those whom our lives impact in any way. Thank you.